The number one resolution for people last year was to save more money, but nearly half gave up by February. Don't let that be you. Download Rocket Money to reach your financial goals this year. Track your spending, cut waste, and automate savings in one simple app. Rocket Money shows you all your expenses and categorizes them so you know exactly where your money's going and where you're overspending. From there, the app cuts waste by canceling your unused subscriptions and lowering your bills. No customer service needed. With that money freed up, the app will automatically set some cash aside for your goals, whether it's an emergency fund, paying off debt, or saving for vacation. Rocket Money's got you covered. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. And on average, users can save up to $740 a year when using all of the app's premium features. Make saving money a priority this year. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Welcome back to Hour 2 of Darkness Radio. I'm your host, Dave Schrader. Hey, for those of you listening to us in podcast format, we have an announcement to make. Please check. You're going to need to reboot your RSS feed to resubscribe to our podcast. You can do that by going to click on the Darkness Radio site, and there'll be a podcast link there. You can click there, and then you can resubscribe, so we'll be on a new stream. So that way you don't have to miss any shows. As of October 1st, we're going to shut down the old stream. So the only way to keep on and keep the subscription going is and resubscribing to the stream. I hope that you'll do that. Again, check out our website at darknessevents.com. Got a lot of great ideas, or a lot of great trips, I should say, coming up right around the bend. We do have a great Halloween party, and we're hoping to see a bunch of you. I know we've got some people from out of the states that are coming, or out of our state, that are coming to join us, Tim.
Oh, yeah.
So, and we just had a nice phone call from a young lady here in Minnesota. We're hoping to get some more Minnesotans out there so they can come have a little fun and meet and greet with Tim and I.
Yeah, we'll have Tater Tot Hot Dish and sit around drinking Schlitz.
Yeah, we had a great time out at the movie premiere this last week.
We did,
well.
Yeah. So, a lot of nice people out there as well.
Very good people.
Yep.
And 10 unsuspecting people walked away with Darkness Radio t-shirts from that as well. So
they did, although you didn't have to hit that one kid in the head so hard.
Well,
I think he had it. He had pretty good hands. You didn't have to drill it at him.
he had it coming.
Oh, jeez.
He was giving you the stink eye.
Yeah, was he?
Yeah, he was.
Well, then that's drill the little kid then.
And so hopefully if you guys listen and you were at the movie theater and you saw the movie with us and you got a free t-shirt, do us a favor, take a picture of yourself in the t-shirt, send it over. We're going to put them up on our website. And if you, the listeners, are interested in Darkness Radio gear, you can go to darknessradio.com, click on the merchandise tab, and you can get a cool Darkness Radio shirt. We've also got a lot of fun shirts up there. We've got the growing in popularity shirt, Don't Scare Me, I Poop Easily. We also have a brand new one that says, I think I just EVP'd. And Tim's personal favorite, we bought this with Patrick Burns in mind, right, Tim? We've got this design. It says, you can't scare me, I'm drunk.
That's right.
That man knows how to party. That's all I can say.
He does.
So we've got those up on our site. Got a lot of fun stuff. Go check out our site. Join our blog. Join our in our MySpace pages. There's links there to all of our MySpace pages. And you can check in the news area. There are links to all of our news correspondents' MySpace pages. We're going to have links up to Susan's MySpace page. Links up to Nicole's MySpace page. So join in. Have fun with us. Be a part of our family and part of our community. We appreciate you doing that. We're going to go back onto the phone. With us on the line, we have Bill Murphy. And Bill, I'd like you to do a little introduction here. You came to me a couple weeks ago, and you were telling me this fascinating story and about John Huckert and what's going on. And I'd love for you to kind of fill in our listeners with that story as well. And then let's bring John on the line in a minute.
Sure, gladly, Dave. And actually, it is a fascinating story. As a matter of fact, that's almost an understatement. John Huckert is not a paranormal investigator. He's a California resident who sort of just stepped into this world of spirit communication, and then his beliefs changed. But the experiences that he has had is the type of stuff that we look for. But in the case of John, it seems like it came to him. And the evidence is overwhelming. He's a very down-to-earth gentleman. I've been tracking this case for several years now. I've had the pleasure of going to meet John in person, looking at the original Polaroids, and I'm telling you folks, this is one extreme case of communication. So let's bring John Hookett on the line, please.
Will do. John, thank you very much for joining us here on the Darkness on the Edge of Town this evening.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Well, this is an interesting story, John. I mean, we've been hearing about spirit photography, I mean, going back to the beginning of photography in general, right? We've had photographs that have been taken of spirits, and Bill, you know that more than anybody. There's been just amazing photographic evidence, and even as far back as when Harry Houdini was around, he was able to fake a lot of ghost spirit photography as well, and was able to debunk a lot of things that people were passing off. So it's not necessarily a new phenomena that's coming on. But the interesting thing, I think, with what's going on with you, John, is the fact that most photographs that are well-known for being faked or famous are ones that deal with a negative and can actually be manipulated once they're in the dark room. Mm-hmm. The media that you've chosen to use, or the media that you accidentally found out, is Polaroid film.
Yeah, that was a gift from my dad back in 1992. He gave me a Polaroid camera for Christmas, and it wasn't until it was in March, I think, of 93, February or March of 93, I'd had the camera and I'd only taken a couple of pictures with it. And do you want me to tell you how it started?
Yes, please. Okay.
Well, I moved into this house back in 1990, and my roommate, John Mikowski, I basically lost my apartment, and I was going to live out of my car, and he said, well, I have an extra room, why don't you live here? So I moved in, and as soon as I moved in, I could sense things and feel things. And he said that everybody had, but he just kept turning off to it. He didn't want to sense or feel anything. But
so you started sensing and feeling. Now, did you feel that you were psychic before this? Had you ever had that kind of openness?
No, I didn't. And I don't necessarily, I think everybody has the ability to, like, hear things and see things, but I think they have to be open to it. And I guess I was open to it, but I didn't really necessarily believe it. But then when I started sensing it, and I'd had prior experience at another house back in Maryland. Anyway, when I was here, we started joking about it because everybody who ever stayed in this house would always see something or feel something or get spooked in some way. And so after I'd been here a couple of years, I sort of got used to it. But then I was sitting in the I was working in the dining room, and I just sort of felt something. And then all of a sudden the bathroom door opened by itself. And so I thought, well, now's a good time as any. So I took the camera and I snapped a picture, and nothing happened, and I felt kind of silly. And then I closed the door and I went back to work, and then it opened again. And then that kind of scared me. So I went to take a picture, and I kind of tripped, and I took a picture of the top of the television set. And then I thought, this is ridiculous. And I just closed the door again, and then I went and sat down. And then a couple minutes later, it opened a third time. And that's when I just got up and I aimed it right at the bathroom door and I snapped a picture, and then I got something that just floored me. But then I started thinking, you know what, there's got to be something, some trick. My dad must have done something to the film because it was still the original. There was like one roll of film, one pack of film from Christmas. So I thought, you know, he must have done something. So I took a second picture, and then I thought, okay, something's kind of weird here. Then when my roommate got home, I showed him the pictures, and he was like, oh, this is really cool. How'd you do it? And I said, well, I don't know. Here, take a picture of me. And then he took a picture, and then we just sort of at first like thought it was really cool, but we thought it was probably something with the film. So then we went out and got another package of film, and then we started, you know, we wouldn't get them all the time, but every so often we get a picture with this weird, like Peter James would call it, spectral energy. And we sort of played with this for like 2-3 months until we finally decided to like tell people about it. But we were pretty spooked in the beginning.
Well, this has got to kind of suck too now because Polaroid has announced that they're not making the film anymore after this year. Isn't that right?
Well, we actually rarely take Polaroids. We only take them on holidays and Father's Day.
Okay.
Sometimes we take Polaroids. And I think we have maybe 10 shots left or something. So, yeah, it'll be bad when it's eventually gone. But
Well, John, did you believe in ghosts and spiritual activity like that before?
I believed in, like, some kind of activity, but I didn't believe in ghosts at all. I just thought there was some kind of energy that we didn't understand, and because I'd had prior things with that kind of energy, but I didn't really think of ghosts or whatever they are. Then subsequently, because of this, I now completely believe in ghosts, and I believe in, I almost want to say guardian angels. Though angels is kind of a weird term, but there's definitely something going on that's conscious and intelligent and old, very, very old, has a lot of knowledge. Old souls, I guess.
So you started getting these photographs. Now explain to us, what was appearing in the photographs?
Mainly just weird bits of, I guess it's like energy, or like some of them were like, they're all different kinds of looks, but it's mostly like white stuff and cloudy stuff. And finally, after a couple of months of this, we thought, you know what, we really should tell somebody about it. So one night we just invited over like about five of our close friends, and we thought, well, we're just going to kind of tell them and see how they respond. So we said, well, some strange things have been going on, and, you know, and they knew that there was always, like, stuff in the house, but it was always a joking kind of thing, you know. And we finally told them, and one of our friends said, well, is he here now? And we snapped a picture, and then we got this stuff, and it was kind of cloudy, and we talked about it some more, and they were like, oh, this is so cool. And then it was, like, 45 minutes later, one of my friends said, oh, my God, he answered us. And we went over, and there on the photograph, it said the word yes. It was, like, really hard to see, but you could see it said yes. And then suddenly it's, like, it's not just weird energy clouds. It's, like, some kind of intelligence. So immediately everybody just started, like, scrambling around. It was, like, crazy. And people said, like, what's your name, and who are you? And, you know, we're just asking a million questions. And when I said, what is your name, he said, Wright, W-R-I-G-H-T. And then that, it was just, like, a explosion at that point.
Okay, so, well, that's nice that the ghost writer's name is Wright, right?
Well,
it makes it a little easier.
I mean, there's been a million jokes about it, but we subsequently started an investigation on the house, having no clue what we were doing, but trying to find out who Wright was. And we researched all kinds of stuff about the house and how, when it was built, and the property, and everything.
And what did you find through the research?
Well, we found out a lot of different people own the house. We're still finding stuff out. We still find stuff out. But we did find somebody named John Wright, who owned this whole piece of Los Angeles for, like, back in the 18th century. But other than that piece of information, there's nothing that would guide us that would necessarily be this same Wright. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So we didn't have anything pointing us in a clear direction that was him. There was also... We found three or four different names of Wright, but none of them were we convinced was a definitive, like, this must be who it is. So, and then as communication got greater, he started speaking in Latin and some kind of old English, and sometimes it would take us a while to figure out, because this was before the Internet and everything, so we couldn't just type in whatever we wanted and get an instant response. So we'd have to, like, do research to find out what some of these things meant. And it was the best thing that happened, though, during this whole time was when the sightings got involved, we wanted to get them in to help us investigate it. Instead, they spent all this effort trying to, you know, disprove it or to debunk it or whatever, and they brought in, like, the Brooks Institute and the Polaroid examined everything, and we had to send the camera out and just all this stuff. But what we wanted, and one of the best things that happened, was we met Peter James. And Peter James became a friend after that, and he came over here many, many times, and he taught us a lot of great stuff.
And for those of you that are not familiar, Peter James is a psychic. He passed away a year ago. He was a psychic in residence, psychic of the Queen Mary for many years. Great guy. You've probably, I think he did like 80 episodes of Sighting. So he had the big white hair and the big dark black mustache.
Yeah.
If you saw him, great guy, very gregarious, very personable.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, we lost him last year, just before he was going to appear at our Queen Mary event in December.
Oh, wow.
Yeah,
Well, I do know that was the reason why we did a book, and we did a we have an art gallery, and we did an opening of photographs, some of the photographs. In fact, we had a whole room that was dedicated to just photographs of Peter and his communication, because he seemed to be able to communicate with it stronger than anybody. I mean, he just... We might get one or two photographs, and he would come over and get 20 or 30 photographs. And it was just basically like a dialogue. They just talked back and forth, and it was just amazing to watch.
And, folks, if you're interested, check out our website at darknessradio.com. Click on upcoming shows and scroll down a little bit. You'll see about tonight's show. And if you click on the Polaroid picture, it'll actually take you through three or four different pictures that John's been kind enough to share with us of some of the evidence. And these are pictures that are in the book, correct?
Yes, and also we put on three videos, which we actually had done to show what the art opening was about. But it's basically, one is a video of, we kept trying to document it on tape, and of course it didn't work for a while, but we finally got one where we basically got the whole procedure so people could see how it worked. And then they're only like 2-3 minutes, but there's a couple more videos of Peter James and some of the psychics that were out here to give an idea of what it was like when he was here. And
give that website so people can go check that out while we go to break here.
Ghostpolaroids.com or seeingthingsthebook.com. Either one of those.
Seeingthingsthebook.com or ghostpolaroids.com.
Yes.
All right, great. Stay hang in with us, John. Hang in with us, Bill. We're going to be back with more. I hope you'll all stay tuned. Remember, if you have questions as we go along, you can give us a call. If you're listening to the Darkness on the Edge of Town Paranormal Radio Show, welcome back to Darkness Radio. Real quick, I got an email during the break, Tim. I'm going to just mention this on the show because I've actually had people mention this to us before.
Okay.
You know, suddenly people are taking offense that now we seem to have an agenda for political because we're on a station with Rush Limbaugh and Jason Lewis and Republican this and blah, blah, blah. Listen, weekends, we were hired to come in and lighten up the weekend load and do something a little different, a little bit more fun. So that's why we're here. We have no political agenda on the show. The liners that run in and out are promotions for other radio show that's going on. And trust me, during Rush Limbaugh, they get Darkness Radio liners too. So that's just the way the ball bounces. There's no political agenda. We're here to talk about ghosts, UFOs, Bigfoot, Bermuda Triangle, and all the other freaky things out there.
We love conservatives. We love liberals. We love independents. We love everybody.
We are.
We don't discriminate.
We're a kumbaya nation.
Now watch. The phone lines are going to light up with our conservative base that listens to 100.3 FM during
you
the day.
Jerk.
They're going to be like, stop loving the belly rubbers.
Yeah, we got nothing wrong with anybody. You know, we're here to talk about this. We're about political and paranormal unity, baby.
That's
paranormal
right.
Paranormal unity.
Give peace a chance or something.
I think we should just vote for the spirit of Abe Lincoln.
I like it.
Yeah.
I like it. You got a great idea.
I like to think so.
Actually, let's combine it. Let's do like a combined ticket, a combined ghostly ticket. I like it.
Good deal. We're going to go back on the lines here, and I've got, let me pull up Billy. Bill, you're on the line with us, right?
Question for John.
Pardon me, Bill?
I have a question I'd like to ask John.
Yeah, and we're bringing John back on the line, too. And actually, before I throw you in to that, Bill, now what I'm curious about, and part of the reason I wanted to keep you in on this interview, Bill, I respect you immensely. You're very analytical when it comes to reviewing any kind of paranormal activity, and especially evidence. And a lot of people don't know this, but you actually do forensic video and photographic analysis. And you're good at breaking down the whole spectrum of what could be faked and what's not. I was kind of blown away that you bought into what you were seeing and that you saw this stuff and that it was interesting enough to me that you talked to me with this passion. When you were first approached and you heard about this ability and these photographs, what was the first thing running through your mind? And did you, I mean, automatically, I knew you had to go into debunk mode, but what did you find, you know, I mean, as you were doing this?
Well, one, could it be recreated, you know, not necessarily in a paranormal environment? The part that was convincing, though, is, I mean, they had cameras running. They videotaped the whole thing from opening the packages of the Polaroid film, inserting it into the camera. Everything had serial numbers, and you watch it develop on tape. You can watch it on film. Just so there was no special effects or fakery that I could see from looking at the video of them actually taking the ghost riding Polaroids. Then they also allowed me to take a look at the actual Polaroids themselves, which was very generous of them. They are in a protected case, but you know, I was able to handle them and examine them up close. And I asked them about some of the security protocols that were in place when sightings was there, that the Brooks Institute made sure there'd be no deviation from. And that's what I want John to talk about, because there's naturally some people in the audience and in the chat room, they want to know about some of the security measures. So I'd like to hear some of that from John.
Sure. I know when sightings first came here, it was supposed to be like a quick little couple-minute thing, and it ended up being the whole show, and then they wanted to do an hour-long live broadcast from the house. But the thing is, they brought in a guy from the Brooks Institute. They brought in, like, I guess almost like security people, but what they did was they had a, the cool thing was they had a huge, huge box just full of Polaroid film. And of course, it's expensive. So for us, it was like whenever we could get film, it was just great. So every box was like marked and numbered and kept, and somebody watched over it every second. So whenever you'd go to load up a camera, no matter who it was, because we had a few cameras here, they'd film you and they'd have everyone standing around watching. The Brooks Institute guy would immediately take the packet of film and he would look at it and examine it and open it, and then he'd hand it to you and put it in the camera. And then you go around and ask questions and, you know, get your responses. But it was like, it was really, they were very precise the way they did it. My only complaint about the whole thing was is that I was hoping they were going to do more research into what's going on. I know we got a lot of people saying, oh, my God, everybody had theories. Is, like, what, is it our minds doing it? Is it some kind of telekinesis? One person suggested that we had a midget in the basement who basically would type into a laser that would write in the air in ghost font in an instant whatever the answer to the question.
Wait, yeah, that sounds much more believable than a ghost.
But, I mean,
Tim, you have a midget in the basement for just like, those occasions, don't you?
Well, among other things.
Yes. Yeah.
Well, we don't have a basement, for one.
Ah.
It's California.
Now you're talking logic. Knock it off.
Yeah, but it was just it was funny to me. But the main thing was is that it was the best thing was meeting Peter James, because he really validated all our feelings and what was going on with it. And when he started opening up the communication, he basically, I mean, he would have practical conversations with the entity. He also said there were more than one entity in the house. There were like seven main ones and then a bunch of ones that came and went. But he said there's only one that was actually the one that was talking. Some of the other lights and energies and things could be other ones, but the one that talked was right. So
that's so we've had this. Now, were they able to, I know I've read a few things online when Bill told me about this, that there are some people that claim that they can reproduce this exact deal. Now, Bill, you had brought up the fact about, you know, if it can be reproduced. But just because something can be reproduced, I think a lot of people forget that, and they automatically want to go to the fact that, well, it can be reproduced, therefore it's no longer paranormal. Just because something can be reproduced does not mean that the original interaction wasn't from a paranormal environment, correct?
Are you asking me or Bill?
Bill.
Oh, well, absolutely. But I've never seen anybody be able to reproduce this particular phenomena in real time. I mean, perhaps you could do things, you know, after the fact. It would be very difficult to do it. I mean, I think, Dave, you and I even spoke previously about how could somebody go about creating ghostwriting photo, and you really can't do it with sealed film and put it in and take a picture and lay it out on the table and have it develop right in front of you, and the images are there. You'd have to go back into the lab with it, and it's almost impossible to do it with a Polaroid that I know of. And the Brooks Institute was not able to debunk it, but they were able to say, well, you know, if you do it, if you have an hour and a half, you can do it on a single photo. But they didn't do it in an hour and a half. They did it in 90 seconds.
And, John, understand, I'm going to bring up some points, and this is not an attack on you. It's just to try to get to the bottom of some of this. I know our friend Allison Smith from SAPS and from the James Randi Foundation had pointed out to me earlier, I guess Penn and Teller released a book, How to Play in Traffic, back in 1997, which contained not only instructions on how to create ghostly messages on Polaroids, but it also contained the materials to do it at home. And according to them, you just take a clear acetate, cover it with an opaque liquid, and use a knife to etch the message you want. Then you insert the acetate into the film container again.
Wow, really?
Right, because, well, I know that when I was a kid, you know, when I'd run out of my film, I used to put the pictures back into the little cartridge, and I'd load them back in, uh-huh. And I'd push the button, and it would keep shooting the pictures out. Of course, it wouldn't redevelop them, uh-huh. But, it, you know, I was able to play with it. So I could see that that is one way to reproduce, and if you're putting in the acetate, again, that seems like it'd be a lot of hullabaloo. And now on your show, though, when they did that, they actually, the sightings people actually provided you the Polaroid film?
Yeah, they provided all the film. But something else I want to say, which I think is really interesting, there's been a number of people who've experienced this, and a lot of people who, like, we don't, like, a lot of people we know still don't even know about it, but, like, if someone is interested in that sort of thing, we'll let them come over and experience the house. But there's been people who, like, they come over and they ask a question out to the air, but you don't even have to ask out in the air. You can just think something, and it will pick up, and it will answer you. And we've had people like weeping and crying and you know, responding to something that when they think about it and then they take the picture, they get a response to their question or to their need or whatever it is. And the thing has changed people's lives. And
so you've had direct responses is what you're really selling it on, is the fact that there's not just this innocuous, it's not just throwing out random words like a Bob Dylan song, it's actually putting them together and answering in a responsive pattern to what you're saying. So
if you come over the house and there's something you want to know or something that bothers you or whatever, I mean, we've tried all kinds of stuff like, you know, what are the lottery numbers? And we can't get that. Who's going to win the horse?
Damn it.
You know? It doesn't seem to want to help us with that. But it does talk to a lot of people about, people ask specific questions about their lives or their careers or something that bothers them. And it answers very, very specifically. And it will address, on a rare occasion, it'll address somebody by name. Usually it doesn't, but it has. There's a few people that's actually mentioned their names. Usually it won't actually say anybody's name.
All right. Well, we're going to take another break here. We'll be back with more, and we'll take some of your questions as well. So, ladies and gentlemen, stay tuned to Darkness Radio. I say hooey. The truth is out there, and the only place you're going to find it is right here, Darkness Radio, baby.
That's right.
Rush Limbaugh. That ain't got nothing on me.
Well, I don't know. When we get the ratings to his point, then
Well, come on, though. He's getting his own truth. Let's talk about the real truth, shall we?
What's the real truth?
Ghost photography, man. Polaroid pictures. That's where it's got to be. We've got on the line with us Bill Murphy and John Huckert, and we're talking about this amazing evidence that John's been able to obtain using a Polaroid camera and getting some lettering that actually responds. Now, what's really strange. I saw the photographs, the lettering. It's almost like this big puffy, like shaving cream looking writing on each one of the photographs. And it reminded me of the end of Fiona Apple's, what the hell was the name of that? Smooth Criminal or some video. What was that, Tim?
Smooth Criminal.
What was it? Some kind of criminal song. I don't remember. But at the end, the smoke kind of comes out and starts writing stuff on the screen.
Yeah. Yep.
And that's what it looks like to me, is it's got that same kind of puffy category. Do you ever get any kind of like just scratching lettering, or is it always a kind of cloudy looking puffy?
Are you asking me?
Yeah.
Oh, I wasn't sure if I was back yet.
Yeah, you're on.
Never scratching, no. It's, I don't know if you've, the one image you have posted is very early on, and it said not ready, but you had to really look at it.
Right, no, I could see that. It jumped out, yeah.
Yeah, the main thing is that it just seemed to get more, I want to say bulbous or something. It just, it got smoother, and it's like there was a learning curve or something for the entity or whatever. I always sort of thought of it as like a lighthouse, and when the beam sweeps by you, you get that flash of light, and sometimes when all the things line up right and it just the energies are right, then you get a response. So that's how I look at it. That's how I think about it.
Well, Bill, when you look at this, why aren't they able to reproduce this with digital photography? Is it because you believe that the spirits are manipulating the emulsion in the Polaroid pack?
That may be the case that happened at the time, because this is going back to the mid-90s. And I believe that there may be communication still that John is not necessarily ready to go public with, and the reason is because when he did go public in 94 with the show and sightings, that appeared to affect the frequency of communication. Is that an accurate statement, John?
Yes, actually, it completely stopped. All activity stopped. It was actually during the fifth or sixth or seventh time they were here, and we got this one photograph. It was like, I think it was Latin, as I remember, and it translated to something. God, this is so long ago. It was like, this is over now, or all this is over now, something like that. And then we didn't get anything. We got maybe a couple of the spectral energies, but we didn't get anything. And it just completely stopped for almost 2 years until we got a friend of ours became involved. And next thing you know, it started back up with a vengeance with this particular person.
Well, are you afraid that by talking to people like me and having a gallery and bringing this to the forefront again, that the same thing could happen and that the spirit communication will just dry up on you?
No, because it's a whole different level now. It's not... The Polaroids are something that happened to us in the 90s. What goes on now is just a lot different. and a lot more profound, and something we don't actually talk about publicly. The reason we did go public with the Polaroids now was because of Peter James. When he died last year, we were devastated by it. He had just been here not too long before, and we'd got a whole bunch of photographs, and he was helping us through a particular situation that happened, a very personal one. And then when he died, it just freaked us out. So we wanted to do something as a tribute to him, and that's the only reason we did the show and did the book and everything, was as a tribute to him. In fact, in the book, there's not a mention of any of our names at all, not even anywhere on the book. Oh, Peter's the only name in the book.
Well, John, let me ask you this, because I know if I don't ask it, I'm going to have all the skeptic nation that's listening to the show kicking my ass tomorrow. Mm-hmm. If you're able to reproduce this so clearly, why wouldn't you step up and do like the James Randi Foundation $1 million challenge and take it to prove that this is going on? If you've kind of bumped it to a whole new level and the spirits are going to communicate with you, whether you've brought it to the forefront or not, why wouldn't you take advantage of that and show, I mean, donate the money so that the spirits know you're not, you know, using them for ill-gotten gains, but why not do something like that and then donate the money to Peter James emphysema?
First off, I don't know what you're talking about, but it sounds really exciting to me. What is that?
Oh, really? Okay, yeah. James Randi, who's, you know, the famous magician and mentalist, he has a program through the James Randi Educational Foundation.
Uh-huh.
He actually has this competition. I don't know, competition isn't the right word. Bill, what's the word I'm looking for? It's called the $1 million challenge.
The challenge, yeah.
And he will, you know, have you come in with your Polaroid camera. They will supply you, I'm sure, with the film, and have you reproduce the ability to create this, so that as long as they can do it under a controlled setting, if you're still getting results, mm-hmm. and making it available. And I'd certainly be happy to facilitate that for you with the James Randi Foundation. We've had James on the show a few times. We're friends with James and with Allison Smith from the foundation, who helps to orchestrate the challenge as well. I'd love to see somebody go in there and take the money from the guy.
I wouldn't mind taking the money. I could certainly use it.
Okay.
That sounds very intriguing to me. I do know that it's not a matter of performing. It's a matter of it happens when it happens. But the level we have of communication now is not about Polaroids. It's a whole different thing, which is way beyond the scope of where we are right now in this conversation.
Okay. Well,
some later date I may share that. But right now it's like the sightings thing. I guess at the end of the day, I was glad we did it, but I mean, I got a stalker out of it, and I got all kinds of humiliation out of it. I was on Talk Soup Radio Talk Soup, called it the Charmin Ghost, and they actually did a very funny bit a couple of times. And but the thing is that's not what my life's about. It's not about proving that there's a ghost here or not a ghost here. That's something that's personal that's happening to us. And that's why we don't normally share it. We share it with people we know, and they can respond to it and feel it and benefit from it. But, you know, we're not out to prove anything. And then if you, one thing Peter used to always say to us, and we actually put it in the beginning of the book, it was a quote by Stuart Chase. And I have it right here. He said, "There's no for those who believe, no proof is necessary. For those who don't believe, no proof is possible."
Exactly.
And I believe that, you know. I mean, I know what's going on here is genuine and real, and it's from our hearts, and it's amazing the communication we have, and I wouldn't give it up for $1 million. You know what I mean? It's not about money. It's about belief, and it's about connection. And the most interesting thing happened to me, though, is that I'm absolutely no longer afraid of death, which I used to be, but I'm not.
All right, well, let me pin you to the wall here then, because I will tell you, and I've mentioned this on the show in the past, one of the main things that's kept me moving forward in my quest here in the paranormal is trying to understand death. I, as a child, laid awake nights, and as a 41-year, almost 41-year-old man, I still do, with just an overwhelming, paralyzing fear of death. And mm-hmm. and so what can you share with us? What can you share with the listeners of Darkness Radio that that maybe you can help alleviate the pain I feel and the fear I feel and our listeners?
Well, this is just part of my feeling and my journey, I guess. But I feel that the only death there is of the physical body. I think, I mean, I didn't used to think this, but I completely 1,000% believe it now, that we definitely go on. It's a matter of the energies that are here and the energies that we have inside of us. And I think some spirits, when people die, I think their spirits want to stay here, and some of them don't. Some of them want to go beyond here. I don't even know where to begin with that, because it's such a profound feeling that...
Well, I'll tell you what. Why don't you kind of pull yourself together on it? I really want to know something about this, because that's part of my quest. We'll take a quick break. We'll come back and see if you're able to maybe formulate at least some nugget that you can throw out to us to, pacify the fear I've got and our listeners. And again, folks, if you're interested and you have questions for our guest, John or Bill Murphy from the technical side, can also PM Tim in the chat room if you're in there, and he will pass a question on as well. We'll be back with more. Welcome back to the Darkness Radio Show. I'm your host, Dave Schrader. Along with me, Tim Dennis. This evening, we're exploring spirit communication in the form of spirit photography. On the line with us, we have Bill Murphy, who's a technical specialist, and also we are talking to John Huckert, who is the spirit photographer in this case and has been getting this film photographs since, did you say it was 1992, John?
Yeah, that's when it started, and I'm not the photographer. I'm one of many, many, many people who photographed.
Okay. Well, you know, we had an interesting question that was forwarded over to me from Don in the chat room, Don from PPRS. She wanted to know, how do you, Polaroids have a tendency to fade over time. What are you doing to preserve them and keep them from fading?
We put them in frames, and a bunch of them are in a book, and actually a lot of them are in a shoebox.
Okay, but there's nothing special that's being done to...
No, not at this point. We haven't. We've taken some of the ones that mean the most to us, and we have framed them, and we've... now that they have, like, all this digital stuff, we scan them in, and we can make prints of them, and we can, preserve them that way, like, digitally. I don't know how you would preserve a Polaroid. It's going to eventually fade anyway, I think, as far as I know.
All right.
Some of them are slightly faded. I mean, the image is still clear, but like any old Polaroid, it's the color that tends to mute a bit over time. I mean, I've got childhood pictures, from when I grew up in my house, and the pictures are still very readable, and the just that some of the color's gone, that's all.
Now, we do have another couple of questions from the chat room, Tim. You said, Blue Boy? Boy in Blue?
Boy in Blue wants to know, have you ever been able to recreate these photos with any other camera, or do you use just one camera to get these results? Also, has anyone examined the camera to be sure that there isn't something wrong with it?
Polaroid actually took the camera for a couple of months and examined that camera. But we've had results with a number of different Polaroids.
Weren't you afraid you wouldn't get it back?
Well, they did eventually give it back, yes.
I would have been afraid that they just wouldn't have returned it.
Well, I don't think it's the camera that's causing it.
It's not the camera.
John, maybe you can tell it.
It's
the house
or it's here. I know we had out, like, the Orange County Psychic Association. We've had out groups of different research groups, and we've had parapsychologists and different people like that. But I remember I was telling Bill earlier this afternoon, there was one particular time when we had, like, 8 or 9 cameras, and everybody was going to take pictures all together. And everyone was concentrating and focusing, and because it was a professional group, and they were doing what they do that they feel makes the best environment to get something. And all 9 cameras jammed at the exact same moment. Now, we do get cameras jamming a lot, but it was just bizarre that every single camera jammed at the same time. So I just think that's from the energies that are here. There are a lot of energies in this house. Amazing. And if you have any sensitivity at all, you will feel it the instant you try to walk up the path.
John, I have a question for you.
Mm-hmm.
Do you feel that the location is where the energy comes from, or is it the combination of people living there now that generates the energy?
I don't know. I do know a long time ago we asked something similar to the house, and it said that he was the spirit of a house or a person. A spirit of a house or a man or something. It was in Latin, so we had to, like, translate it, but it meant something to the effect of spirit of a house or a man. So that kind of doesn't really answer the question, but it leads me to think it could be caused by the energies of the people here.
Sure.
But I do think there's something about this particular place. Subsequently, because of the sightings episode this particular area we live in, it's been on the news quite a few times. There have been murder after murder after murder. Like two houses away, a guy killed his girlfriend and committed suicide. Right around the corner, this guy killed his parents and buried him in the basement. The guy next door kept seeing this screaming woman in his yard. The little girl that was killed that made national news was three houses down the street. It's like the hill has this weird, violent quality to it, and yet our little pocket, just our house and the house next door, seem to have this really safe, encouraging, positive energy about it. So I don't know if it is a location or if we influence it.
We've got another question here from Minneapolis. We've got Cooper online. Cooper, you had a question about spirits?
Yeah, thanks for taking my call. It's a fascinating guest you had.
Thank
here.
You.
I was intrigued by his comment about his reaffirmation or his saying that he doesn't fear death anymore. I know he doesn't want to go into in depth as to his experiences. That sound pretty personal, but in general, what type of affirmations did he have or experience did he have that made him, made that fear go away? Thanks for the call.
Good question. Thanks for calling in, Cooper.
Can you repeat the question? Because I could barely hear him. I didn't hear what he said.
Yeah, what he was hoping to know is, was there anything in particular when we were talking about your fear of death being gone, was there one thing, and we understand it's a little personal on your part, but what was the thing that kind of tipped you? Was there something that you could share with us that was like the aha moment, I guess, of, this is what keeps me from having the fear now?
Well, one thing is that I've known a great deal of people that have died. I mean, a great deal, like since I was a kid. And I know someone who's died in almost every way you can possibly die. That I think, combined with, like you were asking me what I think about it. I think our bodies are just sort of a temporary housing, and I think our souls are endless, and I think that death is like a doorway to the afterlife. It's like a real exciting, miraculous thing that happens when we die. And I think if we change our perspective and quit thinking of it as this huge loss, but it's more a release, and that's what it means to me. I mean, I'm getting, real philosophical here, but
sure.
To me, I've lost a lot of people very close to me, but I've also communicated with some of them since, and that's why I feel that to me, I understand that it really does go on.
So the soul goes on. So that's what's your comfort, is the fact that you're able to get this going.
I can tell you two really quick circumstances. One was my aunt, and one was my father. And in the middle of the night, both times, I got a voice that woke me up and said, John. And I woke up, and I knew something was going on, and I wrote it down, and I wrote down the voice, who the voice was. And in both cases, it was when they passed. Both of them passed. And, I mean, it was like, a decade apart. But both of them, I felt like they were acknowledging me as they were moving on. Subsequently, I've had people that passed that they're still... I don't know how to say this, but that they're still there. I mean, I guess a lot of people who've lost someone close to them, they feel the presence of them, and there's signs of it, and there's all kinds of things. And I think the Polaroids was just a way to kind of open up my eyes, I think, and Peter taught me a lot, too. But I firmly have not, I have no fear of death whatsoever now, which is amazing to me, because I used to be like you. I would panic. I would have, like panic attacks, actually thinking about it, and the universe is expanding, and the world is huge and endless and frightening, and you know what I mean, and this feeling of being lost and destroyed and gone. I don't feel that anymore.
All right. And one other question, quick one for you before we go into break here. If somebody, our friend Fran online says she has a Polaroid, would her camera work, or does it have to be your camera?
Oh, no, it would work.
Okay. So it's just the intent and being in the right place at the right time is what your theory is.
Well, yeah, basically. I mean, okay. We used to have Halloween parties because Peter would always come to the Halloween parties and stir the pot, so to speak. And it was always so interesting and fun to have that happen. And but what we started learning to do was that we would tell people that they could bring their cameras, but if they got a photograph, we wanted to keep it with all the photographs.
I bet. Well, we're going to take our break for the top of the hour. Stick with us, guys. We'll be back in about 5 minutes. You're listening to Darkness Radio.
Are you a fraud-paying American? One in four tax-paying Americans has been a victim of identity fraud. With LifeLock, if your identity is stolen, they fix it, guaranteed, or your money back. Last year, billions in refunds were stolen. Could be from your salary, overtime, or second job. Gone. But this year, you don't need to stay a victim. Because this tax season, fraud-paying American is something no American should have to claim. Save up to 40% your first year. Visit LifeLock.com/iHeart. Terms apply.
Every year, people make the same fitness goal, train harder. But most fail because recovery gets ignored, especially connective tissue that muscles depend on to grow. Frog Fuel was developed by Navy SEALs and perfected by a Stanford-trained scientist, delivering 15 grams of nano-hydrolyzed collagen protein that digests in just 15 minutes. It's science-backed and ready to drink. No mixing, no sugar, no junk. This year, don't just train harder, recover smarter. Go to frogfuel.com. That's frogfuel.com. Stay unbreakable.
Looking for excitement? Chumba Casino is here. Play anytime, play anywhere. Play on the train, play at the store, play at home, play when you're bored. Play today for your chance to win and get daily bonuses when you log in. So what are you waiting for? Don't delay. Chumba Casino is free to play.
Experience social gameplay like never before. Go to Chumba Casino right now to play hundreds of games, including online slots, bingo, Slingo, and more. Live the Chumba life at ChumbaCasino.com.